Welcome to Medicus, a student-run podcast about any and all things in the world of medicine. Follow along as we interview outstanding individuals about important topics in healthcare. Hi, guys, and welcome back to Medicus. My name is Rasa, and today we're continuing our journey in learning more about the various healthcare professions by speaking to Alex Lee, an occupational therapist. As an aside, if you're interested in learning about the work of a speech-language pathologist, go back and listen to our previous Careers in Healthcare episode where we interview Alex's wife, Blake. So anyway, welcome, Alex. It's great to have you on the show.
Rasa, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity with you.
So can you introduce yourself to our listeners, including your education and career progression?
Yes. My name is Alex Lee. I'm originally from Reston, Virginia, up in the Northern Virginia area. I went to the University of Virginia with a major in biology and psychology, after which I went to James Madison University in Harrisonburg, Virginia, and got my master's in occupational therapy. I graduated in 2017. And since then, I've worked in a variety of settings, including skilled nursing facilities, long-term acute care, the trauma unit in an acute care hospital. I did a fieldwork placement in a mental health hospital, Western State Psychiatric Hospital, which interestingly used to be called Western State Lunatic Asylum. This was in Stanton, Virginia. And recently, I have been working in the inpatient rehab hospital setting. And currently, I work at Sheltering Arms Institute here in Richmond, Virginia.
Such a diversity of experiences you've already had.
Oh, and I did want to mention, I recently got the opportunity to be an adjunct faculty member at my alma mater at JMU, and I have assisted in teaching one of the clinical fieldwork courses along with a public policy course. Still very new to that, but just really happy and very rewarding to be able to give back in a way, really by sharing my clinical experience in the classroom so that students can have a rather up-to-date and current perspective for what is happening out in the field.
Congratulations on that appointment. That is quite an achievement.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
So what inspired you to pursue this line of work?
You know, Rasa, like many of us would say, to help people. Mm-hmm. But specifically, I'd like to share briefly the story that got me into occupational therapy. And I'd like to qualify what I personally mean by helping people. I have always been drawn to individuals' abilities to communicate mm-hmm. and to just feel connected. I grew up a swimmer and I was the swim coach one summer. One of my swimmers, I noticed, had a younger sister who would always be kind of wading in the little baby pool area. Mm-hmm. And over the course of several weeks after practice, I would go over and just kind of introduce myself and establish a relationship, build some rapport. And it was not completely obvious to me at the time, but this little sister, she had an intellectual and developmental disability. Mm-hmm. I was able to develop this relationship with her such that, again, over the course of several weeks, her mom asked me if I would be willing to join their family in a therapy session.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I, of course, said yes and had no idea what kind of therapy session it would be. Turns out it was an occupational therapy session. From there, I started research, and it was between my first and second year in undergrad. Mm-hmm. At the time, I was pre-med, and I was not 100% sure exactly what I wanted to do with that pre-medical coursework, if you will. Mm-hmm. So I was exposed to occupational therapy through this one very memorable and specific interaction with this family member, and that is when I learned what occupational therapy is. For her at the time, her occupational therapist focused a lot on her emotional regulation and psychosocial skills. And it was very interesting to me because she paid particular attention to me, I guess, at the time. And so in a way, I was gravitated towards perhaps an ability to connect with her. And I didn't realize it at the time, but perhaps it was a strength that I ended up cultivating, and I continued to research down the path of occupational therapy and ended up applying to occupational therapy school and, of course, pursuing this career.
Wow. So you mentioned you learned what occupational therapists do. So please enlighten us because I'm slightly unaware.
Yes. Occupational therapists enable people of all ages to participate in daily living. You'll find that definition on our American Occupational Therapy Association website. And that definition really encapsulates the core of what we do. And, you know, you can really break that down depending on what setting you're working in, right? So when you say that you're enabling people across the lifespan to engage in daily living, oftentimes that is manifested in either helping an individual regain their functional independence or perhaps maximizing their functional independence, right? Mm-hmm. And the difference there is obviously if someone had an injury, required hospitalization, we think of rehab. Occupational therapists play a critical role in the rehabilitation process for individuals. And then there are instances where an individual might have, let's say, a chronic condition. Well, in that case, the occupational therapist is tasked with helping that individual and that individual's family maximize their functional independence. Mm-hmm. To break it down a little bit more, when we say their functional independence, you'll often hear that OTs focus a lot on ADLs, self-care, activities of daily living. And the way that I like to explain that is these are activities that every single person does every single day of their lives. It might look different from one person to another, but these are the basic foundational aspects that each of us do. We get up, get dressed, we transfer out of the bed. We take showers, go to the bathroom, we groom ourselves, we walk around, functional mobility. So all of these aspects are pieces that occupational therapists specifically pay a particular focus on in order to help individuals maximize their functional independence.
Really interesting. Lots of thoughts circling around in my head. But first, let me ask you, what education is required to become an occupational therapist?
Yes. So to become an occupational therapist, you either need a master's degree or a doctorate degree. It is my understanding that the programs that are currently master's programs are all moving towards the doctorate program style. You also have the ability to become an occupational therapy assistant, where the requirements there are to have a high school diploma or equivalent, and then an associate's degree from an accredited school. I quickly researched and I know that in your state of Illinois, you guys have 11 different occupational therapy assistant programs. You have 8 occupational therapy master's programs and then 7 programs that offer a doctorate accreditation. And in order to be accepted into one of the master's or doctorate programs, an individual will have had to have a 4-year undergraduate degree. Typically, but of course not always, you see individuals majoring in the health sciences, biology, psychology, kinesiology, pre-med. But then, of course, I have classmates who double majored, my roommate actually, in music and theater, in English. There are certain prerequisite courses, of course, that you will have to take before you can qualify in order to apply to an occupational therapy school, but those are at the minimum the basic requirements.
Sure. So I know you mentioned in your introduction to us that you did the master's program. So what does the master's program look like? Because I've learned from talking to your wife that my vision of what a master's program looks like is not all the same.
Right. Yes. So the master's program that I attended at James Madison University in Harrisonburg, Virginia was a 2.5-year program where the first 2 years were the didactic courses, mainly in-class education. The last 6 months were our clinical field work where we are learning hands-on with a clinical instructor in a variety of settings, exactly how to prepare to become an entry-level occupational therapist. So there are 2 years, give or take, most programs have a summer semester as well, mm-hmm. where you're learning from the foundations of occupational therapy, through anatomy, through all the different coursework, what is required prior to going out into the field and then taking the clinical portions of the program.
Very interesting. And then you mentioned prerequisites in undergraduate as well. Do those classes tend to be more basic? Kind of like I think about the pre-med classes, it's like biology, chemistry, biochemistry, or are there special classes that are specific to occupational therapy that you'd have to take?
Yes, the former. I, off the top of my head, don't remember the exact classes, but the coursework does encompass and comprise of the biology, chemistry, statistics, some anatomy, kinesiology, the very, you know, if you draw it out, logical, common sense coursework that would be required for going into a therapy healthcare field of practice and field of study.
Yeah, that's really great to hear, just because, you know, some smaller institutions might not offer these very specialized courses. So it'd be a shame if you were an undergraduate student and then, you know, you realize you want to do occupational therapy, but all of a sudden you're like, oh, my school doesn't offer this. So it's great to hear that they're pretty general.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. You know, because I did not know that I wanted to go to occupational therapy school when I went to my undergraduate at UVA, I did not, I guess you can say, strategize the way that some of my colleagues have. And what I mean by that is there are some schools like JMU, James Madison University, where I went to for my master's, that have a specific track where an individual could be, let's call it pre-occupational therapy, such that their senior year of undergraduate coursework was their first year of their master's program. And of course, I can't speak to the programs that I have not researched, but if an individual, and I would encourage someone, if they're interested in occupational therapy, to really research the schools that they're looking into and whether or not that school, one, has a master's in occupational therapy program. And if they don't, what are the specific courses that would allow them to be able to pursue occupational therapy in the future?
That's great advice. So what type of conditions do occupational therapists treat? I know you mentioned a few, but I'm sure there's a long list.
Yes. So occupational therapists, really, we treat across the lifespan, and we treat both chronic and acute conditions. So from across the lifespan, we start from birth injuries, defects, delays, through life, and then really through the end of life, all the way to hospice care. I have a friend who specializes in music therapy as an occupational therapist working in hospice care. I have another really good friend. She specializes in early intervention, and they go into homes. I know Blake obviously spoke to you about working in the NICU, and there are OTs who also work in the NICU. Regarding the chronic and acute conditions, some examples of chronic conditions include Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, COPD, irritable bowel syndrome, cancer, arthritis. Those interventions will certainly look a little bit different than, let's say, our acute conditions, your orthopedic conditions. I'll speak to the hospital that I currently work at. We have a brain injury unit, a spinal cord unit, a multi-specialty unit, which is analogous to your med surg, where we see a good portion of your orthopedic injuries, and then neurological conditions like strokes. So really anything that could require any sort of rehabilitation, you can definitely find an occupational therapist who can assist in that individual's recovery or process towards their functional independence.
Sure. Some of the conditions that you mentioned kind of made me think, oh, maybe this could be treated by someone like a physical therapist, right? Mm-hmm. So are there instances in which the conditions treated by an occupational therapist overlap with other healthcare professions?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. You know, especially where I work in an inpatient rehab setting, the individual is there with the goal of returning home as soon as possible and as safe as possible, right? I'm sure you might have heard a lot of people like to use this example where they say that physical therapy helps individuals put on their shoes and learn to walk, whereas occupational therapy also assists in individuals learning to put on their shoes, but then learning how to dance. So there is an element of meaning there that is crucial and foundational to occupational therapists. Everything is always tied back to self-care and the individual's ability to perform their activities of daily living. Mm-hmm. Now, when we have a patient who spends, let's say, 2 to 3 weeks in inpatient rehab, you're going to see a lot of overlap between physical therapy and occupational therapy, especially if we're both targeting an individual's activity tolerance, mm-hmm. their general strengthening, their general conditioning, right? But whereas, let's say, an occupational therapist is assessing an individual's coordination when they are trying to do a transfer from the wheelchair into the shower, stepping over a tub, and all of the skills and processes that are required, it could look a little bit different when a physical therapist is focused more biomechanically on the distance that an individual is able to walk, mm-hmm. and compare that from how much they were walking yesterday to the day before, etc. So there is certainly overlap, as I feel like there should be, between occupational therapy, physical therapy, and other disciplines in the hospital. And I find that we are all often very good at communicating with one another while also collaborating interprofessionally.
So that leads me into my next question. How do occupational therapists fit with the rest of the healthcare team? And maybe you can use an example to illustrate. I'm sure you see many every day.
Yes, yes. You know, occupational therapists, especially when I have students, I remind students that especially in the hospital and in inpatient hospital, to be specific, we are almost always the first clinicians to capture an individual's level of functioning after they're medically stable. Occupational therapists typically come in first in the morning before a physical therapist might start their day, wake the patient up, and then assess the patient's, you know, really beginning with their orientation, right? Mm-hmm. Assessing their pain level, and then how is that patient functioning as they begin to mobilize, getting up, getting out of the bed, what is their activity tolerance looking like? We are the first people to identify how patients are doing and how they are functioning specific to their self-care. Mm-hmm. Again, getting up, getting out of bed, perhaps dressing, grooming at the sink. And then with that information, we're able to let the physical therapist or the speech therapist who comes in perhaps after us to perform their assessment and evaluation, hey, this is what I saw. Oftentimes it'll be before, let's say, they get their medication for the morning or for that general time period. So we understand that we are calibrating their level of pain, their ability to interact with us. It could have been before they get certain medication, mm-hmm. oftentimes pain medication. So we're the first to identify these aspects of an individual's performance, and then we're able to communicate with all of the other disciplines, specifically in how the patients are performing, really when they first start getting up and going about, right? Because like all of us, I feel like as healthcare providers, yes, we all help the patients, but we're really interested in, hey, so after they're medically stable, how are they doing? Are they able to just do a task both as simple, but as complex as sequencing, brushing their hair, brushing their teeth? Are they able to orient a shirt and put a shirt on? And so we're able to capture these really critical pieces to share with the team.
That's really interesting. I think being the first person to really understand where the patient is at and being able to assess them in such a way from really the perspective of the patient and what they need, I think is an invaluable contribution to their overall care. So what would you like our listeners, a lot of who are pre-med and medical students, to know about the field of occupational therapy and the role of occupational therapists?
I see myself as a personal trainer for individuals who have had some sort of injury that require assistance to regaining their functional independence. I'd like the listeners to know that occupational therapists are professionals, of course, in what we do, but we bring to the table a level of understanding regarding what is intrinsically motivating to patients in order to inspire and encourage their rehab journey. So I appreciate being on here with you, Rasa, and I would encourage listeners to check out the American Occupational Therapy Association website, which is our national organization. And I believe that each state has their own local association. Here in Virginia, it's VOTA. And in your state, it's ILOTA, the Illinois Occupational Therapy Association website, to learn more about occupational therapy if they're interested, but also to know that, you know, we have a specific focus on all of our patients' self-care, their level of independence, and at the end of the day, wanting to provide our patients with the opportunity to engage in their daily lives with as much meaning as possible.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Alex, for again coming on the show and sharing with us what an occupational therapist does and all of these different tidbits of valuable knowledge. Really appreciate it.
I really appreciate you. Thank you so much, Rasa.
Thanks for listening to this episode. This wouldn't be possible without the support from our listeners. Please rate, review, and subscribe. We appreciate donations to help fund the production of this podcast. To support us, go to medicuspodcast.com, where you can additionally find show notes, links, and information about our guests. We are at Medicus Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. If you have any questions, comments, or episode suggestions, please submit them on our website. This podcast is intended for general information purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine. No patient-doctor relation is formed, and the content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Views and opinions are their own and do not represent any organization.